See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Hope everyone's having a great Friday. We sure are. Been a busy day, man. I mean, like, all of our teams have something going on, right? The Bears are finally putting the pads on. The Bulls have fired Jim Boylan. The Blackhawks are playing playoff hockey. Unfortunately, they're in a pretty big hole against Vegas after losing in overtime last night. Yu Darvish took a no-no into the seventh, and the Cubs are 13-3. And the White Sox are coming home, hopefully, to play this weekend against the St. Louis Cardinals, who haven't played in more than 2 weeks. And the White Sox are above 500, and Fangraphs is giving them a 75% chance to make the postseason. I believe they're the eighth seed right now if the playoffs were to start today. So we got a little bit of everything, good kid. It's exciting times.
It is exciting times. Boy, Yu Darvish was pitching well, and I happened to catch him. Turn it on, I find out he's pitching the no-no, I stick with him, and Justin Smoke comes up.
Yeah, how about it? I got some Darvish numbers. We'll talk about it in a little bit here. But first, it's time to talk White Sox baseball. This time every Friday, we get to talk to our buddy Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago. He is at Chuck Garfine on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. He joins Carmen and Yurko now on the Corona Hotline as we talk White Sox baseball. Chuck, we're getting ready for the weekend. You think they're playing this weekend?
I do think they're playing this weekend. They are scheduled for a doubleheader starting at noon tomorrow. It's on the surface, it's kind of like, wait, you're telling me that the St. Louis Cardinals will go 17 days without playing a game. As far as I can tell, zero workouts, and they're going to go right into a major league, not just one baseball game, a doubleheader. I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but that is the plan. And if you're a pitcher, good luck. On the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, hopefully they've done enough work on their own to get into a Major League Baseball game and be ready for the real thing tomorrow, because that is a challenge, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's almost beyond belief that they have really been able to do nothing as a team and not work out, or at least very limited capacity by themselves, I suppose. But, yeah, pitchers have – I mean, for the pitchers, it's almost a little scary. It's like they need another spring training, kind of, in a sense, like after having so much downtime. But the plan is to play two tomorrow. They're scheduled for two doubleheaders then on the north side to play the Cubs next week on Monday and Wednesday. So we'll see. Hopefully they're playing baseball on the south side. The White Sox come home after rallying to take 2-3 from the Tigers. I greatly appreciated what Dallas Keuchel said. It was really great to hear from Jason McCann that he said the exact same thing to every player in that clubhouse before he took it to the media. What did you think of the way Dallas Keuchel handled things earlier in the week?
You know, with Keuchel, it was a combination of what he said, how he said it, and when he said it. And Jose Abreu spoke today, and he said, you know, hey, we appreciate what Dallas said, but the offense was going to get going anyway, and we would be okay. And not to undermine Jose Abreu, but I want to hear from someone who's been to the playoffs, knows what it takes to win, and that's Dallas Keuchel. He's won not just a Cy Young Award, he's won a World Series. And I mean, Jose Abreu has been around a lot of losing. He is the most motivated player you're going to see. He never takes a day off, but does Jose Abreu know really what it takes to be a winning team in Major League Baseball? He hasn't experienced it. Dallas Keuchel has. And so for him to say that after a lackluster performance, they got in at 2:30 in the morning. Maybe there was, you know, and it wasn't like, I'm sure every White Sox player cared. Every White Sox player wanted to win the game. But, you know, this is the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team is ending losing streaks, or having losing streaks being shorter rather than longer. Yeah. And he sensed like, okay, we are playing the Detroit Tigers for three games, and this is how we came out after losing 2 of 3 to the Indians. We need to be better than this. He said it. I mean, McCann was on board. Tim Anderson was on board. I'm sure everybody was. So I'm glad he said it. We'll see how far. It could be the turning point of the season. You never know. But I really like what he said. It certainly worked for the two games that followed, two wins over the Tigers.
As important as what was said by Dallas Keuchel is the response to what was said. You have to give the individuals credit for listening, absorbing the information. If they had any negative or bad feelings toward it, they found a way to discard it and come out and be productive, specifically Eloy. I mean, you've got to like the way that he was able to respond to it at the plate. In the field, it's another thing altogether. But the response to what was said had to be impressive also.
Yeah, the second game, you had back-to-back home runs leading off the game, Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez. Now, you're playing a Tigers team that, frankly, isn't very good, even though the Tigers have a winning record and they're above the White Sox in the standings right now, but that's not going to last long. I can't see that is sustainable. This Cardinals, assuming – I'm expecting them to play three games this weekend. I really am. What Cardinals – I mean, that's a good team on paper. I don't know what to really expect. I'd like to see them take two or three from the Cardinals, and then they got four more with the Tigers. So here is your opportunity to make a move, make a run. And in this kind of season, these winning streaks are huge. You got to, or if not a winning streak, a run where you win 8 out of 10, 10 out of 15, something like that. They got to do it. And then, get in a position where you're going to make the playoffs and go from there. Because I think this team should make the playoffs, especially with 16 teams getting in. So let's see. I mean, there's an ebb and flow in baseball with teams, with specific players. And Eloy Jimenez didn't do anything for about five games. Then he looked a lot better against the Tigers. But this is a team that feeds off each other. And the offense is starting to go. And I'd like to think now with warmer weather here, I mean, when they were here like last week in Chicago, it was like felt like it was May, and the ball wasn't carrying. I think the ball is going to carry this weekend, and we're going to see some high-scoring games for the White Sox.
Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago is our guest. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. How much of a problem do they have with Eloy Jimenez playing left field?
God, I'm getting this question way too much these days. It's a good question to ask, and I wouldn't call it a problem yet. It is you could say it's a problem waiting to happen in some respects over the course of a 162-game season or a 60-game season. And what I like to say about him is that most of the time he's fine out there. He actually makes plays, but no one really, when he makes a play, no one goes on Twitter and says, look at that play by Eloy Jimenez. He just does an adequate, good enough job to play left field. But it's every once in a while he gets hurt. He ends up in the netting. And that just goes viral, and it becomes a humongous topic. I'm not discounting this. I'm not saying that it's not an issue. He just needs to dial it back a notch when he's out there because he thinks he can make plays like Luis Robert, but he's Eloy Jimenez. That's not his job. Just, play some solid defense and the Sox will be fine. He just, I think he cares too much. And to tell an athlete, don't care as much as you do, that's like impossible. But he just needs to know his place, know his body, and know the plays that he can make. And if he can stick to that, and it's easier for me to say it, but if he can stick to what he knows his body can do, you will not see injuries and you will not see him caught in the net anymore in left field, because that's not a sight we need to see anymore.
No, it's absolutely scary. The league's obviously, this league is, the way it's scouted, this is true of every league, obviously, they're very good. That's why they're professionals. That's why they're the best of the best. And obviously you knew that the league was going to start figuring out some sort of a way to pitch to Luis Robert. And they have a little. The Sox don't, historically, Chuck, find a lot of guys that profile with, just a real patient approach at the plate. I thought, Grandal and Encarnacion would help that a little bit, but we still aren't seeing a ton of walks. The on-base percentage has come down a little, and their swinging strike rate is humongous. And, they're going to strike out as much as anybody, it looks like, this year. Is that a problem? And can Robert sort of find a way to truly take that next step and be an elite offensive player by understanding the strike zone better?
Yeah, I'm very confident that eventually he will. we have to remind ourselves that these guys, and even if you include Eloy Jimenez, they are really, really young. And you might think, well, he's been in the league for 3 years. Well, that's like nothing. I mean, in terms of plate discipline.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think right now Robert's in one of these funks or lulls because teams are, as you said, they're scouting him and they say, oh, he's chasing. So he's in one of these modes where he's just chasing so many pitches. You know, he made an adjustment. Now the pitchers are making an adjustment to him. It's going to go back and forth. And, you know, he's going to have to figure things out. And, you know, he just has to make contact, which is like silly to say, but he's one of those guys where when he makes contact, like the ball jumps like very few players in baseball. So I think he will be able to get out of funks quicker than others, just because even if he just makes contact, more often than not, it's going to be a hit as opposed to just your everyday baseball player when they make contact with the ground out or fly out. I mean, when he hit the ball in Detroit 2 days ago, bases were loaded, yeah. Two outs, big moment in the game. I'm like, oh, that's a fly out. Oh, no, that's almost a grand slam. So, and he got a big three-run double. So I think it's just going to, you know, he's going to strike out a lot. And I think as his career goes on, he will strike out less. But that will be a part of his game. He will strike out a lot. And just, you know, White Sox fans don't expect him to have like a 400 on-base percentage. That's just not going to be him.
We have a tolerance for strikeouts now if you walk a little in baseball, you know.
Well, let me just say this. Okay. look who's leading the league in strikeouts. Who's like right up there? Right, Luis Robert's right up there. So is Ronald Acuna Jr.
Yeah.
Right up there. Like, yeah. Like if you look at who's leading the league in strikeouts, some of the best players in the game are. So that's where we're at. That's the game. And the guys who are, you know, MVP candidates or all-stars, and they do not strike out a lot, those are exceptions to the rule. And this is the game. And so you can, if Luis Robert goes up, has a game where he goes 1-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, but that one hit is a home run or a 3-run double, you'll take that every single day of the week over the course of the season.
All right, Chuck, we appreciate the time as always, buddy. Have a great weekend. We'll be watching. Hopefully they're playing baseball, and we'll catch up next Friday.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
See you, buddy. Hi, there he is, Chuck Garfine, at Chuck Garfine on Twitter. Talk a little bit about the Cubs' big win last night as they stretch their legs out to 13-3. It's hard to imagine that the Cardinals are going to be able to get the requisite number of games in to qualify for the postseason just because they haven't played. I mean, if you take the Cardinals out, they've only played 5 games. Cubs have a 6.5 game lead in the division, Yerk.
They do, yes.
6.5 game lead?
I know. It was about 3 days ago, and the Cubs keep winning. Everybody else keeps losing.
Unbelievable. We'll talk about it a little bit. And what has gotten into Yu Darvish, and is he here to stay? That's coming up next.
Get Carmen and Yurko Pods on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Friday afternoon playoff hockey in August, and the Avs took a 1-0 lead. I don't know if you saw it. Probably my favorite player in the NHL that's not a Blackhawk. He's one of them, Nathan MacKinnon, with a beauty.
An absolute beauty.
He's so good. Oh, yeah, it was a beaut. They got a 1-0
lead. As you can imagine, it's Friday here at the studio, and what do you think Randy Merkin's watching?
Golf. But, I mean, it's the Wyndham, right? I mean, like, there's nobody in this tournament. They're waiting for next weekend for the playoffs.
I understand. I understand. I'm just telling you what I'm forced to do.
Come on, Merk.
I'm forced to watch golf.
For a long time,
it was senior golf. Oh, my heavens.
Merk, you're awesome. You got playoff hockey in the bubble, Merk.
All he had to say is, could you put the hockey on? I would have
put the hockey on. You got Nathan MacKinnon on, baby.
He has to air me out on the air, as he usually does.
I love it.
Well, all I'm saying is what's on.
Boy,
that's not airing anybody on. I've got one television that works in this studio.
You missed
the
sweet goal.
And on the one television that works in this studio, there's PGA Tour golf now, and it was senior golf before that. All those are facts.
I guess I
don't control the TV. I don't have a remote control in here.
It's the beauty of me working at home for another few days.
Oh,
I guess.
Yeah.
In my basement, I got the game on.
Another
with
few
the
days.
Sound off.
If 5 days is a few days, then yes, you've got another few days.
All right, smart guy. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so nice goal. 1-0 Avs. Avs are going to be a tough out. Vegas is going to be a tough out, too. We'll get to that in a minute. But how about you, Darvish? Yurko will now bow down to you.
Oh, I will. Darvish. Oh, go ahead and give me the stats that you want to give me.
I'll give you this. I mean, you
wow
gotta,
me. Wow me with this stuff.
I don't know what took so long. I don't know what that first year was, Yurk. I really don't. I don't know if there was something in his head from the Dodger loss the year before. All I know is I remember watching you, Darvish. I watched a lot of American League Baseball because I'm a White Sox fan. I remember watching you, Darvish, mostly in Texas, you know, and then he got traded that last year, but for half the season in LA, but mostly in Texas. And I watched him be, if not great, I mean, like right on the edge of being
on the cusp.
Great. And so much so when he first, yes. And so much so, Yurk, when he first came to the Cubs, I even picked him to win the Cy Young Award that year. I thought, you know, I thought a league that hasn't seen him a whole heck of a lot, you know, and I know how good his stuff is. I can't explain it, but, man, I'll tell you, Yurk, the last 18 starts. Now, if you go back to last July 1st, okay, 18 starts. Yu Darvish has a 2.72 ERA. He's got 12.1 strikeouts per nine. He's got a ridiculous strikeout-to-walk ratio of 14, which is the best among starters in baseball. And he's got a .83 whip, which is the same in that time span as Justin Verlander and Jacob DeGrom, the two guys who, if I'm not mistaken, won the Cy Young Award last year and are, you know, arguably the two best pitchers in baseball. Justin Verlander hurt right now. Like, he's been that good. Where is that guy? What took so long? I don't know.
Well, I don't know, but let me tell you, victory number 10 was fantastic. That's all I'm saying. No. Of his 10 wins, this one was a beauty. Now, I go over his last 43 starts as a Chicago Cub, and miraculously, we find ourselves at victory number 10.
Yeah. So what's his record now, Yurk, as a Cub?
His 10 and 12.
10 and 12. Okay.
10 and 12.
So he's a 500 kid.
I can't start celebrating him until he gets to at least 13 and 12. Okay, then I'm going to say, woo, he's Ted Lilly. Welcome aboard, Ted Lilly. Now, career-wise, he does lead in strikeouts per nine with 11.1. Did you know that?
He's the active leader?
Active leader.
More than Chris Sale, is that right?
11.1 strikeouts, yeah.
Wow.
You look at his baseball reference page, there's one piece of gold on there.
Huh.
And that's the piece of gold that happens to be on there. So congratulations. I'll go out to you, Darvish, for that. And guess what? If the Cubs were going to be good this year, who was going to have to step up and play the way he's being paid?
Yu Darvish.
Yes. Yes, right now we've got him at $6.7 million per victory. $6.7 million per victory. Boy, if that's the job I could get, I'd be happy to go ahead and do that.
No kidding. Me too.
So he was supposed to be this pitcher. It's taken him 2 years. He's in his third year. We're finally seeing signs of consistency. Of consistent excellence, which is always fun. And I just happened to watch it when Justin Smoke hit the homer. So
how about that?
It's like I felt I then gave him the Goocher. Like I was the bad luck charm. I watched him. I'm like, oh, this could be special. Here we go. I wonder if David Ross will keep him in the game if he gets high on pitches and he's still got a no-no going.
Yeah, some
thought
maybe.
I thought that was going to be a thought that had to go through David Ross's mind.
Rossi's showing him that like he'll give them the chance, I guess, right?
And so what ended up happening... It didn't matter because as I was thinking it, the ball left the yard.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Still pretty
and
great.
I acknowledge that Yu Darvish pitched a fantastic game and he's off to a great start this year. You know, minus that first start he had. But the Cubs needed that to happen. Yeah. They've been looking for it for 2 years. A manager was sacrificed because of it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons why he's gone is because there was no effectiveness out of Yu Darvish. So
if he was pitching like this, they might have won more games. He might have kept his job.
They might have won another World Series if he was pitching like this, Carm.
Yeah, you don't know.
You know, if he could have stayed healthy that first year.
I would have guessed Chris Sale is the active leader in strikeouts per nine. I checked real quick. He is also 11.1. How about that?
Does he have the gold standard, too?
No, but I'm guessing they give it to you because they must go to the 100th place,
I'm guessing.
So you probably has him by like a few hundredths of a strikeout per nine, and that's why
could
he's the active leader.
Could be 3/1,000ths.
Yeah. Maybe they got to go to the 1,000th place. Who knows? That's how close it is. They both average 11.1 strikeouts.
Very tight. Well, either way, he's got it now.
The Cubs, just a few numbers here on the Cubs. And Jesse's going to join us, Jesse Rogers at 133. You know, so they're 13-3 now. Their World Series odds are coming down, as you'd expect, down to about, you could get them at 13, maybe 15-1. Mike North and I will talk about this tonight on Odds Couple, what's happening to the Cubs World Series odds. And, you know, they're a public team anyway. Now they're playing so well. I would anticipate that continuing to drop. They've got a 6.5 game lead, as we talked about, over the Reds and the Brew Crew. Fangraphs has already given them a 98.3% chance to make the postseason. Only the Dodgers at 99% and the Yankees at 98.6%, so 0.3 of a point higher, have a better chance, according to the Fangraphs projections. So that is just how good and how dominant they've been. I think they've got one of the handful of best run differentials in the league, too. Their starting pitching has been brilliant. When you get good starting pitching, even with a few guys in your offense maybe not, you know, performing like they historically should or you'd expect, you got a team that's 13-3 playing free and easy. Anthony Rizzo says, we realize this could be the last hurrah for all of us together. So maybe there's, I don't know, some added incentive. Maybe they kind of look around and they know that the window could be closing on this collective group and they're going to make one last run on it. And I wouldn't apologize for one damn second in this crazy season, 60 games or not. If you win it, you win it, Yerk.
That's right. It's still going to be a World Series. They bring you the little trophy with all the flags on it, and it counts.
You're right.
And we've had truncated championships before, truncated seasons that ended up in championships. The 2013 Chicago Blackhawks did exactly that. I've got no problem with that. It's a World Series. We'll get back to college football a little bit later on. Okay, but college football is going to have a national champion.
Yeah.
They'll play a game. They'll find it. They'll get paid. They're going to do something. The NCAA don't have to put an official stamp on it. They used to have mythical championships all the time, if you remember.
Sure.
You can have yourself a mythical champion this year.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They used to vote on it, Yerk. You have voters voting on a championship.
Right. The AP, the APB, the PBA, all the greats.
Yeah. You imagine? Yeah. The AP, a bunch of writers voting on who the champion is of college football. What kind of nonsense is
that? You don't think there's some sort of bias? You got guys writing out in L.A., never saw East Coast game?
It's crazy.
You kidding me?
Yerk, the whole, is.
Well, we like Michigan State. No, we like Notre Dame. They tied 10-10. Who gets the championship? They gave it to Notre Dame in 66.
Yerk, our beloved Hawks fall 4-3 in overtime. I thought Crawford, you know, I even tweeted at one point after the first couple goals. I said, look, the only way they're going to do it is if Crow is awesome Crow, standing on his head Crow. And he wasn't. So far, but then he really did get good. Without Corey Crawford, they don't make it to overtime, Yerk. I mean, they tripled up the Hawks in shots in the third.
Yeah,
Crow
the
stopped
third
all
was
16
just
of them. Oh, my God. The third period was like red rum, as you always say.
Yeah.
And Corey was fantastic. So they don't even get there. And then, you know, look, the goal, he had not much of a chance there. And
oh,
the Hawks
none.
Were, that line was spent. They couldn't get off the ice, and it's a lazy play in the neutral zone, and they can't change because Vegas comes back in with a little speed after getting the puck in the neutral zone, and the rest is history. So, unfortunately, they gave it, they did some good things again, I thought. They tried to keep Vegas on the outside best they could. They haven't given up maybe as many high-danger chances as you'd expect a team like Vegas to get. But they're still down 0-2, and Vegas still has nearly doubled them up in high-danger chances at even strength, 22-12. So, it's... They just look outmanned, don't they, in this series?
Yeah, they just look to be a smidge behind. Just a smidge. Not a lot, but a smidge is enough. We'll see what kind of advantage they can get themselves with matchups coming up. We'll see with the final change. If they can't win game three, game four is gone.
Yeah.
Okay, these guys are now thinking about going to play golf someplace else. How much time we're going to have before we start again? Mm-hmm. That type of thing.
Hmm. Yeah, you could be right about that. They could just be wanting to get out of that Edmonton bubble if they lose tomorrow. It'll be back-to-back games tomorrow and Sunday. What's happened to the Cat, too? I mean, here's a guy with 28 and 41 goals in his first couple of years, and he slumped this year, Yerk. He scored just 18 in a full season. You know, he's only on pace for about 21 goals. His shooting percentage, which was all the way up to 18.6 last year. So you're talking about nearly one out of every five shots, which is very good. His shooting percentage... this year on the regular season, Yerk went down to 8.7. And I'm wondering if some of that is what's causing him to not even shoot the puck right now. Yerk, how many chances did he pass up where he's looking to make an extra pass in tight when he should just shoot the puck? He's got three shots on goal in the last three games.
All right, we've seen this happen before, by the way. I don't know if you know this. We've seen this happen before. And this has happened to Marian Hossa.
Hossa?
Yeah, it was Hossa who was struggling to put the puck in the back of the net. He used to score at about 14 to 15%, and he was down to 8%. And you've got to shoot. That's it. You have just got to shoot the puck. That's the way it works. And if you don't have confidence in what you're doing, and remember, there were a couple more posts yesterday, weren't they?
There were, and that doesn't count as a shot on goal. That's
not
true.
A shot on goal, but
they hit one in overtime. They hit the post first in overtime, actually.
You try to be too exact. You try to be too cute. That becomes a problem over the course of time. You know, they like to play the post and the crossbar game. You know, sometimes you're playing posts and crossbars, and in the game you end up hitting posts and crossbars. I always like to play the game. Give me 3 inches inside the crossbar, or, you know, 2 inches under the crossbar and 2 inches inside the post. That's the game I want to play.
That's the game I'm with you, Yerk.
Because now you're practicing actually putting the puck in the net.
Kubalik, yeah, his goal was like that. Just nick the inside and go in. I love it.
Yeah, that works.
Inside of the post.
That works.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Jesse Rogers. We'll get a quick Cubs update. If we could still take some calls, too, if you want to talk about the Bulls' decision to move away from Jim Boylan. I think most Bulls fans probably support that. Who are you looking at next? 312-332-3776 is the number. It's Carmen and Yurko. We're coming right back.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Yeah, it wasn't a lonely old night for the good kid, I promise you that, people. The good kid having a good time. Along with my good friend Carmen DeFalco, it's the Carmen and Yurko show making things happen for you. Sam Adams is celebrating the return of sports to Chicago. Every day we're highlighting one of the best sports bars in Chicagoland. Today we salute Crosstown Pub. Text Sam Adams to 31996 for your chance to win a Sam Adams summer cooler. Crosstown Pub and Sam Adams, helping you celebrate the return of sports. Carmen, hope you like that, kid.
I love it.
Didn't know it was coming, but boy, I tell you, I've got a little something for everything all the time. We've got some phone calls, and we've got some people who've got Hawks thoughts and all types of different thoughts. Go ahead, Carl.
Let's get a few minutes with Jesse, and then we'll take some calls. Sound
good?
Let's
do it with Jesse, boys. Hold on, and then we'll go. We'll get back to you.
Just a quick update on the weekend here with Jesse Rogers, who joins us now on the Corona Hotline. He is at Jesse Rogers ESPN on Twitter, and I mean the easy question, and there's no easy answer. Jess is, you know, where was it for the first year and a half he was here? I guess, and he was injured in that first year too, but. It's just this is the Yu Darvish that those of us who watch the Rangers or a lot of American League Baseball years ago remember. I mean, just dominant stuff, Jess.
Yeah, and he's redefining who he is. By the way, where the hell's the music? I can't really give you a report without the
don't
music.
Don't be greedy. But... Don't be greedy, all right?
You know, he's using a cutter now. He was known for his
slider.
He was known for his slider all those years. Now he's got a cutter. It does help that the competition isn't very good. I mean, you look at some of these lineups, the Brewers lineup, not exactly powerful. We know the Indians don't have one. I mean, they haven't really played a great offense. They will with the White Sox and eventually the Twins. But, look, you got to play the teams in front of you. You know, the Dodgers and Yankees aren't on your schedule. Anyway, it's just been amazing. One guy after the other picking it up where the last guy left off in this rotation. But, again, using a cutter more than a slider. His fastball is there. Like Lester, it took a little time to get him in his groove. Like, his first start wasn't great. Lester's been great the whole time, but, he was backed up a little bit in terms of starting. That's why he was named the fourth starter, basically, at the beginning of the year. So, anyway, he's been great. And now redefining who he is exactly, not just relying on the slider, which is what he threw so much over the years.
When Rizzo says, you know, this could be the last year they're all together, I mean, is there not that they don't always try or that they don't want to win, but like, do they realize that maybe the window is closing on this group and they better make the most of it?
Of course. And that was the case back in February. It really didn't matter, pandemic or not. It's just that things are now have shortened up on them, right? They have 60 regular season games and a playoff appearance, hopefully, to finish this off as this group, more than likely. Now, nobody is really up this year other than Rizzo, and he has another option year. So they could all be back. Technically, they could all be back. Lester has an option year, which could kick in depending on his innings pitched and stuff. But more than likely, they won't all be. Let's face it. Whether it be a Chris Bryant trade or maybe Lester goes to free agency. This definitely has that last dance feeling. And whether it's a year or 2 months, we know it's coming to the end one way or another because they're not going to keep everyone.
Thought this was going to be a tough NL Central. The teams in the NL Central are really crapping to bed, and this is kind of a great thing for the Chicago Cubs.
Oh, my God, Yurko, you're so right. I mean, the Reds have really disappointed anybody like myself that picked them to win. Absolutely awful. Like yesterday, what they did, getting down 7-8-9-0 in the second, third inning. Descalfani, one of their regulars on the mound, just a terrible first few weeks here by the Reds. You're right, Yurko. And Milwaukee is just nothing special. Now, I was on a Zoom call with Council yesterday, and he reminded people in his own subtle way that this has kind of been the Brewers the last couple of years, whether it be a 60-game season or 162. In August, they have been a sort of a team that has trailed, but they've turned it on in September, and they've been formidable even without Yelich last year. So it's kind of a little subtle reminder, don't count the Brewers out. I love Chris Council. I think he's the most tenured manager in the NL, which is amazing to think of. Yeah. So, but you're not wrong. Right now, Fangraphs has the Cubs 98%, I believe, making the playoffs. And with the additional teams, you know, that make it first and second place plus wild cards, it's hard to imagine them not in it. Amazing. Just 16 games into the season. We can pretty much pencil them in for October. Not what I expected, Yurko.
No doubt. The Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs, and A's, I think you can pencil in. They're all well over 90% to make the playoffs. I think you can pencil them all in. Real quick, Jess, before we let you go. You've been all over the national stories, too, and especially this Cardinals thing. They're here, you know, supposed to play three on the south side, then a couple doubleheaders next week on the north side. Are they going to play against the Sox this weekend from what you're hearing?
Yes, 41 rental cars driving up to Chicago today. Amazing. Wow. They're going to work out in St. Louis and then get up here. Doubleheader, like you said, tomorrow. Doubleheader Monday, doubleheader Wednesday. So it's crazy how the Cubs and Sox are affected by this whole thing. And I've had a lot of people on Twitter ask me if it's not safe enough for them to drive together or fly together, how is it safe enough for them to play? And I've talked to people in the league. It is really out of an abundance of caution they're doing it this way. They've tested negative days in a row. They're driving separately. But I also reported a week ago that the Cardinals have decided as a team this is going to be a show-and-go situation for them like the rest of the way, meaning show up and play and go your separate way. So it doesn't surprise me that they've decided to do this. Mike Schilt, I've mentioned this a couple times. If you're not in the starting lineup, you're not in the dugout. I mean, they are really going to take things to a max here. It's really going to destroy their camaraderie. Their season's toast, let's face it. All these doubleheaders. So it's about just showing up and hopefully putting up some good competition. Maybe you don't want that if you're a Sox or Cub fan. But it is really out of an abundance of caution from here on out for the Cardinals. So, and remember, the Marlins did not spread anything on the field to the Phillies. I don't think there's a big risk for the Sox or Cubs facing the Cardinals this weekend and next week.
All right, Jess, good work. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
I want my music and take care, Yurko.
All right, Jess. See you, buddy. Jesse Rogers. I mean, I think it's 58 is what, you know, is going to be the requirement for if you're going to cash a ticket in Vegas. So like if you had an over under ticket on the Cardinals,
right?
They have to play 58 games. I don't know how they get to 58, to be honest.
Well, there's going to be a lot of doubleheaders if that's the way they're going to do it.
I mean, it's unbelievable. All right, let's take some calls. West Coast Jason, punch him up, Yurk, on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jason?
Hey, guys. So with everything going on, I'm actually calling to let the good kid off the hook. I was streaming yesterday, didn't realize the Cubs game was televised on national, and I hit the wrong button, went to antenna, and saw the game was on, and was pretty geeked about it, ran back, threw on my Cubs gear, cracked a beer, sat down, and smoke hit that homer, and I took everything off, and felt like I jinxed him right there. So, good kid, don't worry about it. It's not on you.
Honest to heavens, I felt like I jinxed him. That's I felt funny. Terrible, man.
No, you didn't jinx him. Stop it. That's nonsense.
Let's go to Alex in Wheeling.
All right, what up, Alex?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's going on, Alex?
Good. I wanted to talk about the UFC fight on Saturday night, Miocic and Cormier, if you guys got some time.
This is Yurko's fort, for sure. He knows about this stuff.
Right? Yeah, Yurko, I got three things to look out for.
All right.
For both of those guys. I think the first one is distance, because I know Cormier loves to keep it close.
Right.
That's how he won the first one, was in the clinch.
Right.
He loves to wrestle. I think the closer they are, the better it is for him, especially in that smaller cage that he's been talking about.
Right.
Miocic, though, needs to keep his distance because he's got the bigger reach. He hasn't used his leg kicks in the last two matches as much. I'd like to see him do that. Keep the distance. Keep it more to a boxing match. I know both guys have said that they want to keep it to a boxing match. Cormier came out and said that as well. I think he's lying. I think if they just keep throwing punches at each other, Miocic is going to win that one. The second one is the referee, actually, because I think Mark Goodard is the one who got appointed by Nevada to do the match.
Yes.
And he's been one of the more vocal referees, especially with the open hands.
Right.
Which is something that Cormier got away with
likes to jab the thumb close to the eye, open hands to defend against the punch. And then he'll reach out and kind of stab you in the face with it, too. And he got Miocic with a thumb in that last fight.
Yeah. So he got two of them on Miocic, and Miocic said that it caused him to get some surgery. In the first fight, Goddard was there, and he warned Daniel, I think, three times, then split them up, and then warned him again after he started the match. I think this guy's one of the more vocal ones. You saw it on Fight Island. He's not going to let anything like that happen again.
Alex,
I'm not sure how Miocic's eye is after that. He said he had surgery. So this will be the first fight after that.
So
and
what,
the third
listen,
one
what,
to wrap
this,
it up.
Here, here. What, go, turn go, this, quick, go quick, Alex. Yeah. This is going on too long.
Well,
go
hold ahead. On. I'm going to take over here now. Listen, the second fight, once Miocic switched to the body, because guess who won the first three rounds? It was Cormier. Once Miocic went to the body, it was over. Okay, and I don't know how great conditioned Cormier was in that second fight. He looked to be breathing hard. Miocic absorbed a lot of punishment with punches to the face. It never looked like anything Cormier was going to throw at him really was going to have a tremendous effect on bringing him down and knocking him out with a punch. In the first fight, in the first round, Miocic ducked his head. He got caught with an elbow. It was an initial punch. On the follow-through, the elbow caught him, knocked him out. It was over. So this is the rubber match. It's match number three, and I don't think either one wants to go to the ground because Miocic himself has a nice ground pound game when he gets somebody down, and that's the way he beat Ngannou.
I bet he does.
By taking him to the ground. So
Alex needs to do a podcast with you.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex sounds like he knows everything there
good
is to
stuff.
Know, but I mean,
yeah, and they've got a number of different fights there, and the two fights that are on the undercard that are just before the heavyweight match is going to be a real beauty. UFC 252, it's going to be, and DraftKings has got some special stuff going on, so hop on the DraftKings and give yourself a chance to do some fantasy MMA.
Alex is our new Ray Flores. We ever need an MMA or a boxing guy. It sounds like we're calling Alex.
Okay, we can call my boys. Both of my boys love UFC.
Mike North's got his bonus play for us coming up next. We'll crosstalk in about 13 minutes. Don't go anywhere. The 1 o'clock hour with Kermit and Yurko is being brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. So maybe you're thinking about doing some home improvements, huh? Sound good? Well, let the Home Loan Expert help you drop your rate and get you the cash you need. Visit thehomeloanexpert.com.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is the home of Carmen and Yurko.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
Ow. 7 o'clock sharp tonight. Don't miss it. 7 to 8 every Friday. It's the Odds Couple presented by PropSwap. With Mike North and me, so can't wait to talk to Mikey tonight as we've got basketball, NHL bubble, and the playoffs, and baseball, all kinds of stuff, golf to talk about. Mike gave out winners last week. We'll try to do the same again tonight, and Mike joins us this time each and every Friday. We'll bump it up, obviously, starting next week because we're going to be on earlier from 10 until noon, but Mike gives us the bonus Carmen and Yurko play, as we like to say, and it was a winner last week. Let's see if we can do it again. He is at North to North on Twitter. And he joins us now. What's up, Mikey?
What's up, fellas? What's up, Karim? What's up, Yurks?
How are you, kid?
I'll tell you what. I'm telling you right now, I'm feeling good. Got hot over the weekend and more cow and golf.
Beautiful.
I come up with the Celtics. We went 2-0 on the Odds Couple. So I'm just trying to keep a level head here because you know what? As soon as that you start rolling, something could happen. But you know what? I like hockey. And the thing I like about hockey is it's on early today.
That's
okay?
Right.
And I'm talking Vancouver versus the St. Louis Blues. Now, I know that a lot of people right now are looking at Vancouver and they're saying, well, Mike, what does Vancouver really have? I really don't know. And then they say, what does St. Louis really have? I really don't know. All I know is when I was on Vegas Scores and I was picking hockey, I was picking hockey at about 64% because of the system. It seems to work. So I go over everything, and I'm saying to myself, well, wait a minute. Vancouver has been on fire in the Blues stink, yet they're minus 140, the Blues. And there's no fans. There's nothing to get them going. And then I see where the over and under is 5.5, and I say, okay, let's take a stretch here. Let's pick not only the under 5.5. It hasn't gone up. It started at that. It hasn't gone up under 5.5 in that game. And the Blues minus the 140 tonight. I hope the worst that happens is 1-1. I think the best that can happen could happen at 2-0.
Blues bouncing back, Mikey thinks, after losing to Vancouver the other day. I'll tell you who Vancouver's got. They got Bo Horvat, who's ridiculous. Go watch his goal.
Bo Horvat.
His second goal on, what was that, two? That was Wednesday night, was insane. Ooh, well, baby. But the Blues have that championship medal, Mike.
Well, I mean, I go back to, and Yerkes knows this too. We talk about the Blues quite frequently in the hallway. Yeah, we but the Barkley, you know, Barkley Plager, the Plager brothers, Red Barrington back in the
Willie Snepps was down there for a little bit.
Bernie Federko.
Oh, Gary Unger, please Gary stop Unger. Me now. Yes. You know, I mean, crazy. So, I mean, but really, I looked at both rosters, and there's not many familiar names. I've never followed Vancouver. I couldn't tell you who was on Vancouver back when they. Back in those days, but I knew the Blues were a great franchise back then. I think that the Blues pull it off tonight, and they knot it up at one apiece.
Blues on the money line and the under. Mikey, I'll see you tonight. Can't wait.
All right, pal. Me too, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, there he is, Mike North at North to North, and we have odds couple 7 until 8 tonight. The line of the day was just delivered to me down the line, so I'm at home. I'm talking to the guys in the break, Yurko.
Yeah.
Talking to Tyler on the other side of the glass, and Randy. Randy was had to give me a something to read, and he goes, boy, Patrick Sharp really is handsome. And I said, there's no mistake in there, kid. There ain't no gray area, as Yurko would say. Yeah. You better believe it.
But I mean, kid.
Oh, my God. Out of nowhere, all of a sudden, Merck just goes, boy, Patrick Sharp really is handsome.
Kid, I got to take a guy here who's been waiting a little bit.
Go ahead.
Danny and Schomburg. We're going to bring you
Danny,
on board. Danny, what's
Daniel.
Going on, kid?
Guys, you'll be proud of me. I'm getting ready. I'm going to go play 9 holes. I'm going to drink about 9-10 White Claws while I'm out there. Cool?
Look at you.
Yeah, yes. Good for you.
Sounds good to me.
Carm, I felt for you yesterday. I know you were getting a little frustrated with the Hawks first period, but you got my tweet, right? I said you can get tucked in, get your chamomile tea, and hit the hay early,
what
right?
Is that? I don't know what that means. First of all, I was just telling the guys, I was up way too late. I was up to like past midnight last night. I was up way too late.
Oh, I thought you were an early settler. I thought you were at about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Please. And I couldn't. And I had to watch the second and third periods on delay. My son had a baseball game last night, so at 6. So I couldn't even. I only watched the first period. And then when we got home, and Yurko will remember what first-year kid pitch is like. Those games take 2 hours.
Oh, boy, do I.
First-year kid pitch is an adventure. Gio did have 2 strikeouts last night, though, so I was happy about that.
Pitching, not at the plate. Yeah.
No, pitching, yeah, pitching. He struck out. He did strike out once at the plate, too, but he had 2. He got jobbed on a pretty bad call that was, like, at his helmet. And the ump
did you boo him? Did you boo him?
No, we didn't boo him. We didn't yell, but I did because I was standing behind the plate because I'm – you know, I'm like our team's when the dad's got to come in to pitch. Once you get to 6 pitches, the dad's got to come in. So I'm always standing back there getting ready to pitch. And I looked at the ump and I'm like, it's a little high. You know, he can't yell at the ump. He's just a kid. But I'm like, it was at his head. But anyway, yeah, kid pitch takes a while, as you remember. So I got home and I watched the game on tape delay. And then I watched some Dodgers game and I watched some of the Cubs replay.
Exciting. Carl.
I watched hockey. So, yeah.
All right, but when we come back with Crosstalk, I've got to give you this birthday list. It's probably the greatest birthday list I've
done.
Come
on, really?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
All right. Well, Yurko's birthday's next week, too, so we already start celebrating.
Tuesday, man. Yeah.
We'll come back in 2 minutes, and we'll Crosstalk.